Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
Well, Denise, we have some great questions coming into the Master Gardeners during these last few weeks. I'm going to be addressing some of those. We actually had our live show last week with Bill Hooten, and we missed you, but we were really happy to see Bill back here. So we hope to see him again around here. Not that we don't want to see you, Denise, but we were happy to see
That's what Master Gardeners do. They help, you know, duplicate our efforts in the community. There's not, I can't be everywhere all the time. So,
you know, and speaking of Master Gardener activities, we do want to promote one more time that rose pruning demonstration by the Master Gardeners happening at the Municipal Rose Garden at the end of the month.
Yes, there'll be Master Gardeners available out there to show you some pruning techniques. And they'll also have a whole bunch of information, handouts and things that they can kind of show you with live plants, and then something you can take home, because sometimes you're just concentrating and you're focusing on when you're at the garden, and then you get back home and your rose bush looks like an alien and you don't even know where to begin. So it's always that backup reinforcement for you to have for, you know, future references.
And you know, if you're going to go to that rose pruning demonstration, I would recommend if you have a smartphone or if you have a digital camera, you know, take some pictures and shoot some videos so that you'll have something to reference when you do get a chance to start pruning your roses.
Yeah, most definitely.
Well, speaking of Master Gardener activities, again, they're really involved in schools, because I know that there are a lot of school gardens that are popping up around the region, and Master Gardeners do serve a purpose.
Yeah, most definitely. We do a lot of combination of horticulture, adult, and youth programming through my office. And that's really what we have set up for people that are interested in having a garden at their school. And I really think that this really can be big showcase gardens as well, but there can be also a room for really small gardens and to kind of make those connections to learning and get the children outside to see all of it coming together. And then the real learning really goes on, you know, when you're digging in the dirt and then back in the classroom as well. So Master Gardeners are really there to help, you know, guide the leaders, whether those are teachers, PTA groups, campus administrators, to be able to figure out the best location for the garden, what I call the nuts and bolts of the garden, and then as a resource there as they're trying to teach and meet these teaching standards in the classroom.
So Master Gardeners involved in all sorts of activities in the region, including the upcoming Kids and Cows and More happening at the Coliseum in March. And teachers, if you haven't had a chance to register your class, we recommend that you do it pretty soon.
Yeah, most definitely. We definitely live in an urban county. These, you know, animals and plants and everything kind of comes out to you. It's out of the county Coliseum. It's a great way to get a little dusty, a little dirty, but a whole lot of learning goes on out there.
What kid doesn't like to get dusty and dry?
Right.
The parents may not like it too much, but the kids are going to love it. So you can find out more about the Kids and Cows and More program on the Good to Grow page at ktep.org. Well, we had some questions coming in to the Master Gardener hotline because, well, with the weather warming up, we're seeing a lot of spring gardening activities. People are wanting to get out there. And speaking of getting dirty, they do want to get dirty and start planting things. And maybe even pruning things. And that's one of the questions that you got not too long ago. And this is something that I'm actually thinking of doing this weekend. But somebody wanted to know, when do I prune my lantana? And I think they mean if it's lantana that dies back, almost all lantana dies back in the winter, and you have all that dead growth, there is going to be some new growth coming down from the roots, but when is the best time to take off all that dead growth?
Right, exactly. The two different types of lantana that you're talking about is that bush lantana that's more of the upright, and that usually you see that in the lighter purples and yellow color, and then you have the prostrate lantana that's going to grow more of like a mound. And depending on the location of where it's planted and how cold our winter has been, it kind of dies back to a certain degree. And really, when it starts dying back in the winter time, because it's not really frost tolerant, we just kind of say leave it hanging on there, because those dead branches, those half, you know, hanging on leaves really serve as a protective mulch over that entire root ball that we're really concerned about during the winter time for that to freeze down. And then after a while, you know, it just kind of just sits there, and then all of a sudden it gets warm enough, we start seeing what we call bud break or leafing out. Life kind of starts coming out from that crown, and you realize, well, do I take it off? How much do I take off? So now is definitely a really great time to start getting in there and pruning, doing a really nice severe pruning on your lantanas. Don't be afraid to take it back Sometimes lantanas can grow like 1 or 2 feet out in one growing season. So don't worry about taking off too much. All of that new growth coming from the crown will take over and it will fill in that area. And yes, we are still in the middle of February and we still have a chance to be able to get a frost. But don't worry about that. We're you know, not looking into a deep frost or deep freeze. We're a little too late in the winter for that. Start getting out there. And I know people also they just like to cut. Like people like to prune. And I just like related to people like even when I was small, like, you know, my mom would cut my bangs and like she would cut and then she'd cut some more. So people just kind of like, you know, that feeling of an accomplishment.
Whether it's cutting your bangs or
being out in the yard. I really do believe that it's a correlation. People are happy about that kind of stuff. And lantana is definitely your plant if you want to do that and fulfill that need.
You know, and I would also recommend wearing some gloves if you're pruning back lantana, because you can get little pricklies stuck under your fingernails and all over your hands.
Yeah.
It does get dry and twiggy, I should say.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and good gloves are always a great tool to be able to have in the garden for that kind of stuff.
Well, another question that you had that I think everybody has issues with is winter weeds, and not necessarily in a rocky landscape, but in your Bermuda lawn. And that was a specific question. How do I control winter weeds in my Bermuda lawn?
Yeah, definitely. When we talk about different types of plants, they're classified by different ways. And one of the most common ways is on how they're grown, whether they're a monocot or a dicot. And I know those are 50-cent words, but usually your monocots are going to be your grasses. And those are going to be also corn for some reason. So if you lift up a leaf in the air, you kind of see it. And if those veins on that leaf are going parallel, that's a monocot, or that's grass in the grass family. If you pick up another plant and those veins are kind of webby and they're kind of like all over the place, then that's a dicot. So that's a really quick and easy way to kind of identify what kind of weeds you have in your lawn. And that's important, because when you're going to go out and buy a chemical, it's either going to say for grassy weed control or for broadleaf plants. Broadleaf plants are going to be your dicots, with broad leaves, big leaves, heart-shaped leaves, you know, all different oval-shaped leaves. And that's a difference for that, because they're very specific, and that's how herbicides are classified.
Because I guess if you're trying to kill Bermuda grass, you know, because there is – Bermuda lawn can be weedy because it could be growing where you don't want it to, and that's what you'd be using that grassy weed killer for, right?
Exactly. So you have a grassy weed killer and you're trying to apply that on your grass lawn, then you're essentially going to be able to kill that Bermuda grass. But you're in luck. It's still really early. Bermuda grass is very sensitive to temperature. So when we hit that 80 degree temperature mark, then we're going to start seeing that Bermuda start coming out of dormancy. So right now, as the weather is still relatively cool, I mean, we've peaked up into, you know, the high 70s lately, but still you can be able to spot treat those weeds in your lawn. This does not mean to spray your entire lawn, because you'll be wasting chemical, you'll be wasting your time out there. But if you have little areas, little concentrated areas, you can certainly feel free to put a grassy weed killer on that specific area. Now, that's going to be your last approach. If you can get your weeds, they're still small enough, the best way to control them is to dig them out. Don't just take the weed whacker and try to cut the tops off. You want to make sure that you get those roots off as well, because of the way that the plant will reproduce through runners and through underground stems as well. So you want to make sure that you take off that entire clump of grass.
And some of those weeds are pretty tricky, because they have a very deep tap root that it's just very hard to get out. And I've had issues where I've tried to pull a weed out and the leaves will tear out, but the root's just stubborn and it'll stay there.
It'll stay there, exactly. And that's why they can become invasive as well. Another really common weed at this point is the London Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
That one's a broadleaf, and it's kind of characteristic by that little clump of little yellow flowers right at the top of the base of the plant. And you want to make sure you take that off. Don't let that ever go to seed and to be spread into there. If you find it small enough and it's just the weed itself, you know, you can smother it. You can, you know, turn it into your lawn if you have a larger property. And don't worry about that, because you're just putting in nitrogen into your soil. But anytime you start seeing that flower, it's going to very quickly go to seed. So that's your trigger to to pull it out.
And also around this time, I'm pretty sure if people maybe have sown some wildflower seeds, they're probably going to see those coming up as well. So if you are uncertain as to whether you're actually growing a wildflower or a weed, I think that's maybe where you need to give it a little bit of time, right? So that because it's going to have, once a weed starts growing out, it's going to have a very identifiable look.
Yeah, those little seed leaves that come out right as the seed germinates are really tricky to identify because they all look the same.
Yeah.
So definitely let those true leaves come out. So give it a couple more, a little whirl of leaves to come out so you can identify that. But if you think you've planted them in that area, don't be premature to pull them out.
All right. Our next question is about fruit trees. And this is, I think, a question that we sometimes see pretty frequently on our live shows is, well, what fruit trees grow best in the region?
Right, exactly. And that's a really great question. And we do have a issue with fruit trees. Our altitude, our climate play a part to be able to have what the suitable fruit trees are going to be here. You know, we get all of our chilling units, which is what how trees are classified in. And when we accumulate that bank of chill hours, then the plants are going to sprout and they're going to flower. So you have these, you know, beautiful peach and plum trees, you know, all sprouting all over the place. And then we get a late freeze and then all the your flowers drop and then you have no fruit.
That's right.
Sometimes you also get other freezes where you have more of a serious dieback as well and you lose your fruit trees. So really, if you want to do fruits, the stone fruits, those are great. Just keep in mind that you may have to replace those. You know, they're 10, 15 years later, they just may have to just decline, you know, depending on the stresses that we just inherently have in this climate. There are other fruit trees that you may also look at. Pomegranates and figs are really great fruit trees. There's a lot of great persimmons. And don't forget, those biggest pests out there in fruit trees are going to be the birds.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely going to beat you on that. So they know when the fruit is ripe, they're going to get to it before you do. So you need to prepare for bird netting and be constantly aware that they're going to be out there.
I think that's where a pomegranate, I think, would be to somebody's advantage, right? Because they've got that nice, tough skin. And I don't know if birds attack pomegranates.
Yeah, not unless they split and fall to the ground. Yeah. Then we have an issue.
Well, we have one final question with the time we have left, and I think this is something that the Master Gardeners are going to be holding workshops on soon, is when do they plant their vegetable seeds in the garden? Well, I know some people sow their seeds indoors and then plant them outdoors. I'm wondering if maybe this question is specifically for seeds you can just sow directly outside.
Yeah, definitely. You want to make sure that the soil is warm enough to be able to do that. So the most common vegetables that you have in the nation, and even that's very true locally, are going to be your tomatoes and your peppers. Tomatoes, you don't ever want to directly sow them into the ground because it's just not going to work out for you. They need a head start. They need to be transplanted into the ground. So give them about 4 weeks. So right by the beginning of March. Now peppers, they're a little sensitive and they need that soil to be a little bit warmer. So you can definitely, you know, take that out another 3 or 4 weeks and get those transplants out. Everything else, when you talk about your summer crops, your melons, corn, you can definitely directly sow them when it's appropriate. And we have a lot of planting calendars specifically designed for El Paso to be able to get you going for those.
And you can get those planting calendars by calling the Master Gardener Hotline. You can call in with your questions, and I'm sure they have a lot of other informational handouts that they'll be able to help you out with for any questions you may have. Their number is 566-1276, 566-1276. And remember, you can also contact the Master Gardeners on the Good to Grow page at ktep.org, where you can email them your questions. We want to thank you so much for listening today. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And we want to thank our guest engineers, DJ Orozco and Belinda Fernandez. And remember, a gardener shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.